Welcome to the Barbara Schulte Show with host Barbara Schulte and producer Ben Self. The Barbara Schulte Show brings conversations, stories, and tips intended to power up a writer's potential for more success, fun, and the confidence to write and live with grace, courage, and the grit to never give up.
Hi, and welcome back. In this episode, you'll meet Megan McQueenie. She is my role model as a person and as a leader because of her boundless creativity and no limits thinking. Her knowledge of horse training, care, horsemanship, coaching, and breeding is extensive and world-class, no doubt. But that's just the beginning. It's her ability to inspire others to believe in themselves and reach for the stars that I admire most. She is the COO of Brave Hearts Therapeutic Writing Center. Hey, Megan.
Hi. Hey, Barb. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just delighted to be with you. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so happy you're on this podcast. So I'm in good shape.
Thank you so much for having me. It's fun to be across the table from one of my most favorite people.
Yeah, well, it's mutual. So, Megan, I want to start by hearing your background with horses. Like, how did you ever start with horses in your life? And just kind of take us on a little journey.
Yeah, grew up in Florida, and I was born without my right arm. So my parents didn't know that's how I was going to enter this world. And I was in a family of athletes. My dad was a very competitive person and had an older brother and older sister. And my dad was really of the mindset that I was going to grow up in a two-handed world. And he wanted to get me fitted for a prosthesis, an artificial arm, as soon as he could. And at that time, I was really young and missing key developmental milestones. So I wasn't crawling or pulling myself up or any of those kind of things. Mm. And he thought it would be fun to get me a couple of Shetland ponies. My mom grew up riding, and we had property in Florida and big corral. And he started me with two ponies. And from about the time I was maybe two, three started putting me on them. And I grew up in Florida, and the humidity and the heat was horrible, and I didn't like to wear my dad would say, do you want to ride your pony? And I would say yes, and he'd say, go get your arm. And so that was kind of my motivator.
Smart dad. Mm-hmm. Your dad, he had it going on.
Yeah, so I did that, and really stuck with the horses and got injured all the time, got bucked off, and my parents said they were investigated for child abuse because every time I went to the hospital breaking another bone, when the doctor would say, what happened? I would say, I fell off my pony, and they were like, how many times can this happen to this little kid? So I did that, and then as I got older, into junior high and high school, started to get more competitive, started riding hunters, and really took off with that. As I went off to college, I still stuck with the horses and started to do a lot more AQHA events and Western Pleasure and Trail and some of those type of competitive events. And then after I graduated undergrad, then I got an opportunity to start riding cutting horses, and I thought that was great fun. Did a little bit with reiners too. Just really have had fun with all different kinds of disciplines, from English to Western, getting to ride with some phenomenal mentors and teachers over the last, 40 some many years that has just taken me in all different directions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when did we meet? We met maybe, I was going to say, at the turn of the century.
Ouch. Right.
Like around 2000, mm-hmm. somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both of us just really looking for exceptional brood mares and trying to,
in the cutting world,
mm-hmm. build our
helping
programs.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'd call each other and go, what do you think about this one? And Megan, you would always say, well, in the thoroughbred world, what we do is, you know, we look it up and, wait, what's it, what are the records called in thoroughbred?
And they call it pedigrees are really big. And
yes, but there's a way that you can automatically look some things up that you can't
get to. Yeah, all of their, I mean, there's just so much history to the thoroughbred lines, which I've always loved studying and have gotten some opportunities to spend some time in that industry as well.
Yeah. So that's really how we got to be really good friends. We were comparing notes, and that's fun. And it's been fun now that we watch the cutting generations from those mares, and we see it, and we call each other and say, look whose baby, grandbaby did whatever.
Those names are still around,
I
the good
know,
ones.
I know, they are. Okay, and then what happened?
And then in 96, I'm going to say, I got introduced to a family that had a little boy with Down syndrome, 1996. And I had a really good school horse that I was doing a lot of work with. And we put a this young man, his name was Tim, and he was nonverbal, and he was also non-ambulatory. He wasn't walking, he wasn't talking yet, and he got on the horse, and he signed horse. We put his little fingers up next to his head and made the sign language for horse, and his mom started crying and was just completely in awe of what he was doing and how motivated he was and how happy he was and how he was able to sit up and just completely changed this young boy. And the family asked if he could come out the next week, and I had talked to a family that I knew well and asked what they thought about it, and they suggested that I could have access to their attorney and some funding, and why don't you do this and help some more kids like him. And so we started a nonprofit and started a program specifically for children with various diagnoses, and it was extremely successful and really dipped my toes in the water. At that time it was called NARA, which was the North American Riding for the Handicapped Association. I just at that time really wanted to make it my mission to be as good of teacher, instructor, coach for people with any diagnosis possible. So I just immersed myself in studying the field, the industry, the diagnoses, the contraindications, the adaptive equipment, you know, everything you would need to build a program. And then we duplicated that program and did another one. First one was in Colorado and the second one was in Illinois. Got to take some young riders on to Special Olympics and the World Equestrian Games, and I became a Paralympic coach. And then got involved with veterans to come out, and I started judging horse shows at Bravehearts, and didn't really know a lot about the various diagnoses of veterans, but was curious enough about it because I hadn't done that, and taught my first lesson with a group of veterans and was just completely in awe of the community and the drivenness of a veteran. And I was like, okay, these are some amazing people, and I'd love to try to help them advance their horsemanship. And then got invited to, from judging their horse shows, to becoming a consultant, and then eventually was asked to step in and on, as the president and run the organization of Brave Hearts, which is now the largest equine program in the nation for United States military veterans.
Woohoo!
So it's been a lot of fun, and it's more than rewarding, and it's definitely a blessing from God just getting to be, you know, in the front row and get to see people's lives change directly from horses. It's more than I could have ever dreamed. I remember a long time ago, Shannon Hall, a friend of ours who was at our farm, and we were working cow horses, and he just looked at me and he said, you know, it's just amazing what, you know, God's done in your life because of your, you know, your situation. I looked at him and I was like, what situation? He's like, well, Megan, you know.
About your arm.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, it's just, it's been awesome. It's been awesome as far as how I've learned to work through, you know, challenges that I have, and how we can share that and learn from one another and from kids to adults. You know, there's really nothing that, right, you can't, if you put your mind to, that you can't do. So, and it's fun to get to do that with horses.
Yes, it is. They're nothing the great gift that we have. Megan, just now when you were talking and you said, I watched those veterans like the first time and knew that there was something special. And I, you know, the other night when we were on the Zoom call and we were getting ready for this event we're about to do, you texted me and you just said, aren't the veterans just so awesome? So what, tell me about that. What do you mean and what are you feeling and thinking?
You know, I don't know which came first, the intuition around horses or the intuition around people, but I definitely think that there's something inside of me that is very drawn to certain people and certain horses. And I love a challenge. I love a difficult horse or a challenging person. And I have this knack that I just, sometimes when I see something, I just see potential. And I love that as far as if a horse or a person doesn't even know that that's even on the table and helping people, you know, make that journey and, you know, start to believe, you know, that horse is just such a catalyst for change. And I love that. I love watching that unfold. It's like better than a Christmas present, you know.
Well, what is it that you see?
Sometimes I see the finished product. Believe it or not, it's just, I don't know what it is, but it's just something that I'll meet somebody and I can just instantly feel, I don't know. And same thing with horses. I'll just meet them and there's just something there. I don't know if it's an energy. I don't know if it's a look. There's just something that just tells me internally, like, this is somebody special. And I just usually go with that.
You don't question it. You just...
No. And it happens a lot. Yeah.
That definitely is a gift. And then with the people, you have the horses that are that help you. Instead of you just saying, don't you know how, you know, great you are, whatever.
Yeah, no, the horses do all the work. So you just have to, you know, put the two together. And the horses are, you know, the catalyst. And the horses are the real heavy lifting. The horsepower behind it all, and just putting together the partnership and setting this scenario up to be as successful as possible. And sometimes I can't even plan it. Like, you know, sometimes I've learned as I get older to try to plan it less and less and just to kind of roll with it. We had, just to give you an example, we had one time a woman who had texted me, or I'm sorry, emailed. And a lot of times I'll pay close attention to the timestamp in an email. You know, if it's something's coming in at 2:15 in the morning or, you know, the middle of the night, I usually try to put those at the top of, you know, my priority list. And anyway, she contacted us and said that she hadn't left her house in years. And she wanted to give the horses a try, and she was scared. And she couldn't be around anybody else. And we started emailing, and then we started talking over the phone, and she finally came to a place where she said, okay, I'll come out to the farm, and I'll try it. And we cleared out the farm, and I just remember praying in the parking lot and saying, okay, I don't know what's going to happen here. And I couldn't plan it, but we took a walk together. We walked through the farm, and she connected with one horse. It was a horse I probably would not have chosen, and she connected, and we went in the round pen, and it was, you know, it was extraordinary. And that's what I get to see in my job all the time, is just how the horses step in all the time, and they find a hole and they get right to it. And I love that about them as a species.
Yeah. Do you think the horses intuitively know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. They have so much intuition, and, you know, obviously being a species that survived for as long as it has, they can read intention like I don't think anybody or any other animal can, as far as sizing somebody up and adjusting in the moment up or down to what that person needs. And I don't know how that's duplicable in any other, you know, clinical setting. I don't know how, or a hospital or with a medication, like it is with a horse. Physically, cognitively, emotionally, it's just like the horse heals. I've said this before, but I don't know a situation where I haven't seen a horse help.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't had someone come out and say, no, this just isn't for me?
No, we've had that. Sometimes those people come back around. Sometimes those people send you a letter later. Sometimes, you know, maybe they weren't ready at that time. But I'm a big believer that, you know, there's definitely a change that happens. And it might be, you know, horses might not be, like you said, everybody's thing. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that that person didn't go home and put their head on the pillow and didn't have a self-reflection and maybe think about, you know, what that horse taught them that day.
So if a veteran, so how does the program work? How do the veterans come to you? And then what happens when they arrive or, you know, what happens?
Yeah. What's really special about Bravehearts is that it is all custom made for the individual. So if a veteran comes out and they've been riding their whole life, or if a veteran comes out and they have extreme anxiety about being near a large animal, we're going to have a program and an instructor, volunteers, or maybe we don't need any volunteers, again, just based on that person and their needs. So there's not a set protocol that says, okay, week one, they're going to groom a horse, and week two, they're going to lead a horse, and week three, they're going to go in the round pen or whatnot. It really comes into the first time the veteran comes, as far as just getting them acclimated and comfortable, letting them breathe and feeling that they're welcome and that they can connect with a horse. That's really our job the first time that the vets come out. And
how would they connect? Like maybe just opening a stall door?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it could be grooming. It could be leading the horse. It could be riding. It could really just depend on who that person is. Sometimes we have veterans come out individually. Mm-hmm. Some veterans come out in large groups. Some veterans come out with the VA hospitals and all the different units. It could be in a PTSD unit. It could be in a blind center unit. It could be in the HUD unit. There's just lots of different parameters. But each group is going to have a certified instructor with them, and they're going to, we coach a lot about reading the air.
About reading the air? Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Just like when you meet somebody for the first time and just being able to tell, or a group, if it's tense or if it's, you know, a group that's going to need encouragement, or just how you pick up on that. I bet you're really good at it from teaching lots of clinics and just intuitively knowing that. Mm-hmm. But just, again, just making everyone feel comfortable and relaxed, and just really making sure that we are going to set them up to be successful, not get them in a situation over their head, and make sure that they feel like they have had a connection and that they have felt like they've been challenged and they've been able to meet that challenge. You know, with veterans and with programs like Bravehearts, it's important to recognize that these are men and women that have defended our freedom. You know, they have had really important jobs in our country, and they should be treated with the utmost respect. So, you know, putting them on the end of a lead rope and with sidewalkers, you know, probably is not going to help retention rates at a center if we do that. But if we set them up with horses that we know well, and we know those horses know their jobs well, and we can immediately unclip the horses and let the horses go to work, and our instructors are savvy enough to start to teach the group about moving the horse's body and, you know, directing feet and direction and all that sort of thing, then everybody's successful at it. Mm-hmm. And everybody feels empowered, and all of a sudden it's just not just a walk and stop lesson. And that's what we really love to do at Bravehearts, is really pushing people safely on to really gain serious horsemanship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In whatever that is, if that's dressage work, or if that's cutting, or if that's learning how to rope, or if that's, doing groundwork in the round pen, or working wild Mustangs, or whatever that is, we try to make sure that we have all of those disciplines available, and those different programs available. They're all designed by the veterans. It's been over time that we've learned this is what veterans are interested in. Okay, let's do a program for that. We try to roll a new program out every year at Bravehearts, and we try to make sure that program continues to go on. And that's all based on need.
So that brings up the next point. I don't know, Megan. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I don't know how, I mean, it's like, it gets me real emotional. How you do what you do. You know, you always have this incredibly creative program for the veterans that just excites them so much. And then that program is maintained.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
It's a huge team of people. You know, we have a spectacular board of directors that gives our crew, our staff, freedom to innovate and to design, and then backs us up with, you know, the resources. We have an incredible community that, if you haven't been to see Bravehearts, we'd love to have you out there. But seeing the farm firsthand, as you have, Barb, and breathing it and watching it and seeing all the lives that it touches, it's pretty special place for sure. I've had multiple people tell me that that's not a farm, that is a miracle farm, that really extraordinary things happen there. And so making sure that we have the resources, you know, incredible volunteers that keep our farms every day rolling. Our staff is extremely mission-driven. Our horses are the best.
They are the best.
They are phenomenal. And again, each of those horses have come to Bravehearts because of a phenomenal donor that has entrusted us to take care of their baby and to make sure that their baby leaves a mark on the world and makes it a better, you know, society a better place. I mean, how awesome is that to share your beloved partner, your friend, to go on and do incredible things? I mean, I think that's a pretty special gift. So there's a lot of moving parts of the programs, but it's a big community that helps it all happen. It's so many people, Barb, like yourself, and so many people that just give and share and, you know, lend and jump in. And that's, you know, we're down here at this cutting, and I mean, every day getting text calls of people, emails, hey, what do you need? This is amazing. You know, that's when you know you're onto something special, right?
Exactly. Well, one thing that I can say about going to Bravehearts is that everyone who walks in the door, I'm going to say this about people first, then I'm going to talk about the horses. You feel, number one, very welcomed, and you feel very valued, and you feel at ease. And you not only feel it for yourself, but you feel it for, or that all the people there have that value. It's a culture that exists. So it's a happy place, but it's also a very, like, respectful place. You know, every person interacts that way. And then the horses at Harvard, the horse at the Papa Grove, I don't mean this, but the horses at Harvard, those plaques, tell them about the plaques on the stalls. And, you know, it's just like they're, you know, $1 million thoroughbreds or something. You know, you walk in the barn and you get this feeling like, this is, you know, Joe, and he is the champion of the world. I mean, that's the feeling that you get.
Yeah, no, they're the rock stars. They for sure are, and I don't think I'd trade one of them for any Kentucky Derby winner, I'll tell you that. I mean, they just are exceptional at what they do, and you're right about the respect piece. You know, these horses, from their bloodlines to their training to the donors that have given them to the sponsors that support them, we really try to make sure that our horses have every resource possible to do their jobs exceptionally well. I think that's another blessing that our board really lets us treat our horses as they definitely deserve. I mean, sometimes people think that, oh, I'm going to donate my horse to a program because, you know, maybe it's not sound in the show pen or whatnot. And that's the exact opposite of us at Bravehearts. You know, our horses have to be so sound for the work they're going to do. When our donors decide to give us a horse, you know, it's a horse that's going to be really fit and really, you know, healthy mentally and physically to be able to be successful at his job. And our job is to make sure that for the rest of his life, we give him the very best care so that he can do his extraordinary work. And these are performance horses. There's no doubt. I know you've seen them work and the jobs they do. We have one of our programs called Trail to Zero, where our horses ride 20 miles for veteran suicide prevention. And they ride through major cities across the country, through downtown New York City, Central Park, Ground Zero. They ride through Washington, D.C. They ride through Chicago and go
How
down Michigan.
How special is that?
And the horses do it with such pride and grace, and I would say that they'll rival any mounted unit horse, you know, from the mounted units. They are just so composed. And again, they've been exposed to so much at our programs, you know, from wheelchairs to mounted lifts to lots of people in big events and all that sort of thing. So they've been prepared their whole life with us. But it's really special to see them be successful at that too. But they've got to be sound, and they've got to have every resource at their at our fingertips so that we can keep them healthy.
Well, that's such a win-win for everybody. I mean, talk about the veterans and how they experience Trail to Zero riding. I mean, riding through Ground Zero. In New York City, I mean, that must be just something.
Again, this concept came from our veterans who said, you know, we're losing so many veterans in the United States to suicide. We lose 20 to 22 veterans a day in the United States that are taking their own lives. It just should give all of us as Americans pause for some serious change. These people who have defended everything for our freedoms and come home with no freedom, mentally, emotionally, whatever their diagnosis
physically,
that they're dealing
sometimes.
With. And so we hear at our farm so often how veterans say, I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this horse. I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this farm. And so we just decided, how we can we take that message so that more veterans give horses a chance instead of taking their life. And so that's really how the idea for Trail to Zero came about, that we were going to keep riding until we could get this number down to zero. And it doesn't matter if the number is 5 or 10 or 25. If it was, you know, 10 NFL football players every day, it would be on the front page of every single paper. I don't know why we're going to continue to allow this to exist. So we know the vets love the horses. We know our farms work, and we want to try to reach more veterans through these rides. We have a database so that when vets contact us from across the country, we can try to hook them up with another program, or we have a transportation grant so we can get veterans to Bravehearts so that they can get help.
I think that transportation grant is amazing, because I know two of the veterans here in Fort Worth, where we're getting ready to do this cutting, one's from California, or we're in Texas at the moment, and one's from California, one's from New York.
One's from Oregon. So that's pretty special that they have found their way to Bravehearts. They, you know, didn't have programs that were near them or were a place that they could really, you know, work on their horsemanship. And so we figured out different events where we could connect with them and bring them to the farms or to the special events as we could. And we have a super generous donor that wants that to be what they do, and they make sure to keep that streamline of funding available. So if veterans need to get flown in or bused to us or take an Uber or however they need to get to us, that does not become a deterrent from getting them to the farms.
Megan, I know you, and I know that you work really hard, day and night, all the time. Well, first of all, you manage all the team leaders, and then you help them manage their teams, and then you write the grants, and then you communicate with the sponsors, and then you manage the building, you manage the horses, I don't know if I already said that, and then there are two huge facilities that have to be managed, and you live in Wyoming, and the facilities are in Illinois. So how do you do that? And before you answer, I just want to tell you this. You are one of the few people I know that whoever is around you would jump off of a cliff for you. It's true. I mean, it doesn't matter. Whatever Megan wants. I don't know how she does it, whatever Megan wants. So how do you have a philosophy of managing people and being a leader?
I would say that I don't ask anybody to do anything I wouldn't do myself. That's something I definitely, why I think I'm such a hands-on person. that I really want to make sure that I have that in my hip pocket. I like to have answers and I like to have results. And so if somebody says, you know, we can't do it because of this reason, I'm going to want to know why, and it would be better if I already had the answer figured out. So, you know, I've always been very driven. I love the work I get to do. I love the horses and I love the people that I get to be around. And, you know, even on a bad day, it's a great day, you know, and just keeping that mentality and not getting ahead of myself. I really try not to think about the big picture and just think about one thing at a time. And that kind of helps keep me grounded and doesn't make me, you know, too
crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, when I get to that place where I'm a little bit out of sync, it's just horse time, you know, just finding where I can just be quiet and be alone and go back to, you know, what got me here. And it's all about just even my time that I can find with my horse. And that's definitely the root of all of it, is my deep love for horses and, you know, myself wanting to always be a better rider, a better horseman. And that's my journey. And I love that. And if I can share that with other people, then that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I love the story about the woman. I keep thinking about that, who hadn't been out of her house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some other stories you could tell us that are moving?
Yeah, I have a lot of stories. I mean, I just had one today that happened to me earlier, but some of my favorites are there's a gentleman that really struggled with substance abuse, and when he came to the farm through a VA hospital, and he was really struggling to find his sobriety, was really dealing with a lot of PTSD, and he actually came in from Texas, and so he was in a unit, a PTSD unit, inpatient, and when he finished his time in Chicago, then he went back to Texas, and his family called us and said, he's on the loose, and we think he's headed your way to the farm. He kept telling everybody about how much those horses meant, and we think he's going to be up there, and we don't know if he's going to be dangerous, and we don't know, but we just want to prepare you that he's definitely headed north. And so some of our staff talked about it and tried to make a safe plan, and he ended up spending 2 years coming out to our farms every day. He spent a lot of time cleaning stalls, and he ended up becoming an instructor and an incredible horseman. And was a really probably one of my most difficult students that I'd ever worked with, just because he was really strong and he was really stubborn and was very opinionated. And, you know, got off of a horse one day, got on a horse, and I was trying to help him learn how to put his horse next to a gate and trying to help him be able to take a horse through a gate horseback. And he couldn't do it, and he couldn't do it. And I said, here, why don't you hop off, and I'll show you how to do that. So I popped on the horse and showed him, okay, this is how you do it. And he took his helmet and threw it against the wall, and this huge, loud explosion because the helmet hit the metal, and there was about 10 veterans watching. And he walked out, and I said, hey, you got to come back here. And I just remember in that moment thinking, like, he probably, you know, there's a 50-50. It's a coin toss here. I might never see this guy, or, you know, I hope that he turns around. And he turned around. And I said, come on, you got to give this another chance. And he said, okay. And our relationship changed from that moment. And but he went on and was so successful in his journey. And I'll never forget the night that I was standing behind him, helping him get certified to coach. And he was teaching, I don't know, there must have been, I don't know, 8-10 veterans all horseback. He lined them up all in the middle of the arena. And I was standing behind him, and I was scoring one of his lessons, because we have to do that as they prepare for their certification. And he said, gentlemen, I just want to tell you how well you did riding tonight. And I want to tell you all that exactly 1 year and 2 months ago, I came off the same PTSD bus that you arrived here tonight in. And I know when I say that, I know where you're coming from. I know the shoes you're standing in. I know where that is, and I want to let you know that there's hope for you. And I just thought to myself, wow, that's a pretty awesome thing to get to hear somebody share that and see how far he came. But there, you know, all honestly, Barb, like you could say, there's no horse, there's no person that's around Bravehearts that doesn't. I mean, it's just like each story you start to hear, it's like, wow, like mm-hmm. it's almost like it keeps getting bigger and bigger, and you don't know how it's going to get any bigger, and it keeps doing that. And so, you know, I'm a huge believer in horses, obviously, but when I first started at Bravehearts, I was probably there maybe 3 or 4 months before I heard the first time somebody said, like, you know, that the horse had really saved their life. And I thought, wow, like, you know, God does that. You know, God puts these horses here for that reason. I didn't think much of it until the second time I heard somebody say it, and then the third time I heard it. And now I can't tell you how many times I've heard that statement, and it's weighty. And I think that's another reason that drives all of us that work mm-hmm. around the farms, because that's not a responsibility you take lightly, you know. And and knowing that these type of people are the best type of people in America, you know, like you've met the veterans, like can you imagine your life without them? I mean, you know, they are just the most inspiring people that have so much to give and share, and keeping our country as wonderful, you know, as what they've already done. And a lot of times they tell you that, you know, I don't think I have anything left, and I don't know why I'm still here. And it's like, man, you're just getting started, you know? Mm. Like that whole experience that you just went through was just groundwork for what's coming up, of how many you can share. And I think that's really what's so special about how those horses just are that common denominator for this huge community to all come mm-hmm. together and help one another.
The horses are such a great segue for them.
Mm-hmm. Runway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Today I got a little insight when I was talking to Amanda and Paul, two of the veterans, and they were talking about how in the military you train for every different scenario, and then, you know, when something happens, you know, one of the scenarios you have to react and go and do, and then you train, you know, you just keep training and, you know, responding, reacting, and then you feel like good at it, at doing that. Mm-hmm. And then you come home and then you don't have anything to apply that to. And Paul was saying that that's one of the reasons why he's been so excited about the cutting, because it's reminded him of his job of, you know, looking for the terrain, looking for his buddies around him, looking, you know, combatively, I can't even use the right terms, but the weather, the communications, mm-hmm. all of that, that he had to multitask constantly under intense pressure, mm-hmm. and that he doesn't really get the opportunity to use those skills. And Amanda said the same thing. And that in cutting and being in those cattle, mm-hmm. that it's like, okay, there's that cow, and here's my horse, and I've got to step up. And that was one of the reasons that mm-hmm. it was so much fun to kind of reawaken those skills. But that in civilian life, often coming back, that there's no application, you know, plus there's some of the internal kinds of wounds that they don't, you know, like they don't have a way to use what they do know, plus they're trying to deal with these other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot, you know, to be said for that. Of again, there's just something about the makeup of a veteran, you know, about how truly mission driven they are. And how, if we can channel that and use that to help other people like them, then I think it's obviously been a journey worth going through.
So I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is getting back to the cutting. What are you going to be feeling when they walk in the herd?
Oh, my gosh.
When they show. Well, first, tomorrow's a clinic, so mm-hmm. that'll be fun.
Yeah.
But then on Tuesday, they're going to compete. And I was thinking about you watching them.
Uh-huh.
Have you thought about that?
You know, I've had to watch them in some other public, like, venues, in some other major venues, at some other, you know, big exposure. And every single time, I feel like it's a huge learning curve for all of us, myself included. You know, we did Cheyenne Frontier Days and constantly in front of, you know, thousands of people. We did, obviously, each time we do Trail to Zero, you know, and you're in front of so many people. And then we've done the Midwest Horse Fair where, you know, we were the primary act. And so, yeah, Tuesday is going to be exciting. And, you know, I'm going to be just thrilled that they put themselves out there. I mean, that they're doing this. They've already won, right? So, I mean, I'm just so beyond excited for them. Mm-hmm. And I will be... I'm, as you know, very competitive. I want them all to win. I have 16 favorites. But I, you know, I'm going to be very excited to try to keep coaching them through, you know, making sure they stay composed and focused and all the good stuff that you taught me. To just make sure that they feel successful. And, you know, one of the vets just earlier tonight was asking me about it, and I said, you know, as long as you feel good, you know, as long as you feel happy and you're proud of yourself, like that's it right there. And I think that they're all extremely well prepared, and I think they're all exceptional people, and I think they're going to do fantastic. So and I think all the groundwork's already done. So
even though they've been razzing each other, they're like going to be rooting for each other, of course.
Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit of that fun competition, trash talking that's going around, but it's all in a good way. It's healthy competition for sure.
Yes. One of the vets that lives away from Illinois was talking about how he was been. I saw him in the hall, and he said, "Yeah, I've been practicing." But it was during the finals, and he was watching the pros. And he goes, "But I don't think it's probably going to do any good after watching all that." So that was really cute. It was like he was like, "Oh wow."
Yeah, I mean, you got to give them all big credit, right? I mean, they've taken on a new sport. They are putting their time and their energy and their focus in this in a big way. They all have families and they all have, you know, things going on at home, and they've sacrificed that time to be here. And then they're putting their trust into new trainers and horses that they've never even ridden before, and they're going to go do it in front of, you know, a crowd on a live feed. I mean, that is awesome, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's just they are all certainly definitely worthy of being here. And I just think when we selected the group to do this, we couldn't have picked 16 better people. So they're going to do great. But my heart will be full for sure.
So what's next for let's talk about Brave Hearts. What's next for Brave Hearts?
We have our number of Trail to Zero rides coming up in the fall. So we also host the Special Olympics.
Wait, where are they going to be?
This year we'll do New York, Chicago. We do Indiana. We do Lexington, Kentucky with Equitana. And then we will also do our fifth one, which is just more of a conditioning Trail to Zero, which is on our 800-acre property that we can use as a satellite for Brave Hearts. And so that's a good one just to kind of get all the horses and all the vets out there and kind of get all the kinks out there and sore tushes out of the way and moaning and groaning and doing it in private versus in front of, you know, stoplights and people asking for pictures.
Now, remember, no complaining about sore tushes.
No.
At the stoplight.
No bathroom breaks, no nothing.
Oh, my gosh. How do you do that in the middle of New York City?
Oh, we get creative, you know. it all works out. But, yeah, we have to restrict fluids for 24 hours prior. No. It's all good.
Yeah. So. I bet there's some real logistical things. Anyway, there's that. And then do you have new Mustangs coming?
We got a new Mustang last year, and kind of my rule of thumb with the Mustangs is to try to make sure that we take them as far as we can before we then get additional ones. So, you know, we have 48 head of horses, and so it's just a matter of making sure all those horses are in use and doing well, and whatever program they're being utilized. Some are used for multiple programs, and just making sure that those horses are, you know, going forward. And there's a lot. I mean, just the hardest part at Bravehearts is just so many hands on the horses. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of continuing education that we have to do across the board, from our volunteers to our instructors to our participants and whatnot, just make sure that we're all on the same page as far as, you know, so these horses aren't getting, you know, different questions or answers from mm-hmm. so many different people. So that's probably one of the hardest parts about Bravehearts.
I see. Megan, I want to ask you this question because you've told me this a lot. You know, over the years I've done, well, you came to a cutting clinic mm-hmm. way back, and then mm-hmm. I've done different performance trainings mm-hmm. at Bravehearts. And you have talked about that you use those skills a lot. Mm-hmm. Explain what you use and what it does. And
yeah, I use what you taught me all the time. I've used your techniques in not just showing, but also just in, you know, I can think about when I have to give speeches and when I had to give my TED Talks and, you know, have to, you know, often be in front of the public and in some high pressure situations, sometimes even with veterans or groups or big donors and asking for large amounts of money or all those types of things. But, you know, the visualization piece you taught me is key. I really work on that really hard. Even thinking through, like you just asked me a couple minutes ago about, like, how are you going to be? I've already thought through, you know, how those 16 runs will go.
Uh-huh.
We're teaching them each to think through their 2.5 minutes. I'm thinking through each one of them.
Are you doing their visualizations mm-hmm. for them?
I do, yeah. I do the scripting techniques as far as, you know, the self-talk and trying to keep myself positive. I love what you have taught me about rituals and how I try to put those into my horsemanship from before and after, and how I try to handle my horses just so they can understand what's coming or when they're done. And I think that's really key. I think horses thrive on consistency. Mm-hmm. I think people do too.
Yes.
I love that. And then the recovery piece is probably my favorite piece that you taught me about, as far as just recognizing that every speed bump or hiccup is a no problem situation, and just really taking that head on and thinking, okay, I love this, right? That's what she taught me.
Bring it on.
Let's do it, you know? And how am I going to bounce from that? I think about that a lot. And I think those have just been, you know, some of the, here just a couple days ago, one of the veterans asked me in one of the Zoom meetings, you know, like, how do I control my nerves? And I was like, okay, this is how we're going to, you know, work through it. And those steps that you've taught me, I use all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I used them before I went into labor with my kids. Like, I mean, I literally do them a lot. Anytime I feel like myself, I feel like I'm getting that where I'm just getting anxious and getting worried and getting stressed mm-hmm. and just bringing it all down to, you know, those techniques. And I just find it extremely grounding for me mm-hmm. personally. It's mm-hmm. totally changed my being as far as how I can think through a situation and not like panic through a situation, you know. And that's one of the things I think that I've learned from you, is that you can't learn if you're not comfortable. Mm-hmm. So get yourself comfortable and breathe mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. take yourself down to being very present so that you can clearly think through those scenarios. Mm-hmm. And then they're always successful.
And so do you share those things with your trainers? And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're great. And we have, you know, these certification processes. We help, you know, lots of the veterans become certified instructors, and, you know, our accreditation process and all these places that we can institute, you know, those teaching opportunities and mm-hmm. just the whole mindfulness. You know, I just think that so many of us working around horses just take that completely for granted. If you just stop and think about what you're thinking, you know, the horse is already doing that. He's already ahead of that. So you really have to bring your mind there.
It's so interesting how it works for us and it works for people. Mm-hmm. Just that self-awareness, getting calm, making a decision, using the tools.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the horses are just like a biofeedback loop. Like they're the litmus test. They're telling it to you right there. You know, if your horse is amped up, if your horse is drilled down, like what are you going to do to get that change? And that all comes from us as people, you know?
Yeah.
So if we can't take a hold of ourselves and our thoughts, why would they ever entrust us to do that to them?
Yes.
You know?
Plus, you know, we've talked about before how we as people, and I think horses too, want to be seen. Mm-hmm. You know, horses really love it. If you notice that they're uncomfortable, I mean, that sounds like something that's basic, but so many people just kind of go and saddle and with bridle on. I mean, they're not paying any or very little attention to nuances. Mm-hmm. But we, even if we want to do that, we can't do it unless we're in a very calm and very mindful state. Mm-hmm. And so I'm believe besides just putting ourselves in a state to call up what we know how to do in any situation, it also allows us to be perceptive of a horse, because that's our number one job, is for as a good horseman and good horsewoman to notice the horse and interact with the horse in a way that our clear message is and builds their confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And horses, you know, they're pretty black and white. You know, it's not like in the herd, they're like saying, hey, Barb, do you feel like going over and getting some water? Or like, hey, this could be a dangerous situation. What do you think we should do about it? They're like, let's get out of here, you know? Or this is totally safe and we can just, you know, not to anthropomorphize here, but they're very black and white, and we oftentimes miss those, and we oftentimes take for granted their state of self-preservation that I believe kicks in with horses, trumps everything. It trumps thirst, it trumps hunger, it trumps everything. So if we can figure out how to get them through that, where they're not looking at, like, you know, what's going to eat me or kill me, and help them through that, then everything is easier.
So what would you say your passion is?
My passion is horses, and I think that how we can compassionately use them to help people. I mean, I think that's probably it in a nutshell, to make sure that they do feel, you know, valued and important. And I believe horses love having jobs, and I think horses definitely, you know, know when they're needed, and really making that connection between people, and then getting people to really understand who horses are to the core and how much value they can add to your life is pretty fantastic to get to be around that.
I
love them so much. They're just so amazing at what all they can do, and I feel like every day I know less and less about them because there's just so much to learn, you know? And it all comes down to time, how much time you can spend with them.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I feel exactly the same way. It's like the more I learn, not the less I know, but the more I see there is to learn.
Yeah, it's we probably haven't even scratched the surface, right, as far as what horses are capable of doing. When it comes to how what they can share and how they can make somebody feel and what they can give to add to somebody's life.
Well, I want to be sure to acknowledge that you're quite the horsewoman yourself. You're an excellent rider, and you teach all the instructors how to coach and teach, and it's awesome.
It's a lot of fun, and it's a work in progress, right?
I think I was thinking about this the other day. I think you're like a professional trainer on steroids as far as, like, instead of 20 or 30 horses, you have 48. And instead of a couple of helpers, you have, I don't know how many, 10 or 20. You know, instead of a few clients, you have all of the donors, all the sponsors.
Yeah.
So you have all those same tasks, and you manage them with such grace and creativity and innovation. So,
thanks, Barb.
Yeah, you're the best.
Thank you. I feel the same way about you.
Well, we're going to be having fun the next couple of days, and I'm really looking forward to it. And
it's going to be awesome.
It is going to be awesome.
And thank you so much for helping, you know, make it all. Because I know we've talked about this before, but obviously the veterans are a huge piece of this, and the youth that are coming out to compete, it's going to be fantastic. But the trainers, I mean, that has just been so fantastic to see everyone coming together and investing so much time in people one-on-one and hearing their stories and understanding their journeys. And it's just been a real moment of pause, I think, for our industry, don't you think, for the cutting horse industry?
Absolutely.
Think about what is really important. And it's just been amazing on how many lives have really, you know, intersected from this event. It's way more than I could have ever imagined.
Well, and I think that at every level, like the trainers just kind of going, whoa, about the veterans. And then the parents being so excited about their kids being with the veterans. And it's just, and the team, idea of a team competition, and, you know, rooting for each other, and, you know, within the team, and the fans rooting, and you know, it's just really, it's just great.
Yeah.
Really good.
It's definitely an event that I think has superseded what any of our expectations have already, you know, were already. So I don't think there's any loss here at all. I
there's
think
it's no always failure.
Been yeah, no.
There's no
it's
failure.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Megan, thank you for taking time out of your busy, busy life, and especially in the heat of the battle here. We're getting, the horses are arriving, they're getting put up, or they're already tucked in. But, you know, I know a lot of people need you and want you, and so appreciate it.
Thank you.
So
it's so nice to visit and to reflect on it, because I think a lot of times when we're in perpetual motion and planning and launching an event, and then we go into the next one, it's nice to take a minute just to reflect on what's all happening and all the goodness that's all around it. And thank you so much for being such an outstanding partner in it all.
Oh, it's, you know, I feel like I'm the lucky one. So don't kick me out, okay?
Never.
Okay, Megan, thank you again.
Thank you, Barb.
The Brave Hearts NYCHA competition went off beautifully. There was not a veteran, youth, parent, trainer, sponsor, or spectator whose heart wasn't wide open. And I hope that Megan inspired you to know what's truly possible for you. The sky's the limit. And you can find out more about the Brave Hearts program at bravehearts.org. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, have fun, love on your horse, and never stop believing. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Barbara Schulte Show. If you have enjoyed this episode, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram to stay tuned for future episodes.